Colossians chapter 4, verse 5, and Ephesians 5, 16 would say roughly the same thing, but we'll look at both of those passages for a starting point this morning. And we'll go canonically, so Ephesians chapter 5, verse 16, first of all. Now things have settled down. We'll say the All for Jesus offering so far is just over 25,000. And I know some will probably come in yet. We had some come in Sunday night. I don't think we had any come in Wednesday night, but there may be other people going to contribute yet to it. And so that's where we are on that. And then as far as the marshals, Matt and Julie have agreed to come. They want to come. They checked it out with Brother Carter, who they're currently working for, and he said it'd be fine. So he's willing to let them go. And Matt works in the radio station now, but he had other plans for him, but he said he'd be fine with him if he came. So it's just a matter we have to drop a formal proposal and drop it in the mail. I think that's the right thing to do, and then have so he has it, what our offer is in writing, and then it looks like they'll be coming. It's just a formality, and then we have to vote on it. We will vote on it. I'm not going to run it over top of you. If we find out that it's like 60-40, then we have things to talk about. If it's pretty close to 100%, then we don't really have anything to talk about. But anyway, be in prayer about it. I think it's the Lord's will, and I'm very excited about being able to do this. I think it's going to be a great benefit to the church. In Ephesians 5, verse number 16, and we could probably back up a couple of verses just to get the context. Let's say verse number 11 be a good starting place. You go back to get complete context, you've got to go back to Genesis 1:1, but for the purposes of this morning. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather approve them. For it's a shame even to speak of those things which are done in secret, but all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light, for whatsoever doth make manifest is light. Wherefore he saith, Awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is, and be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess, and so forth, but be filled with the Spirit. Now, judging by what comes before, and again, to kind of isolate these things a little bit, you have an admonition there in verse number 11, to not do certain things with your time. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. And that's one of the ways that our time can be consumed, is in the unfruitful works of darkness. And better not even talk about those things. And then, again, the admonition to walk in the light and to walk circumspectly. So, looking around you circumspectly, circle, circumference, In other words, looking in every direction is to walk circumspectly. Being alert. You don't want to... Did you ever get lost? You always want to check your back trail, And you want to see what it looks like over your shoulder, not what it looks like going this way, because what it looks like going this way is totally different than what it looks like going this way. And so whenever you're going someplace, you want to be looking over your shoulder so that you can find your way back. And I don't know whether it was years in karate or whatever, but I'm always, any movement, anything going on, I'm always aware of it. I like to position myself where I can see everything. I want to be in a corner, as far away from the door as I possibly can be. Don't want my back to any windows or doors. Just that sort of thing. I don't know where that, probably some of that came from growing up on the street, some of it probably came from martial arts, but the idea of being circumspectly, because there's all kinds of things that can get you if you're not looking for it. If you're not aware, it'll just sneak up on you and get you. And we are in a warfare. And the interesting thing about this century and the times in which we live and the terrorism, the type of warfare that's being waged now with terrorists is probably more like what spiritual warfare is really all about than any sort of a grandiose, glorified, romantic kind of a 18th century cavalry or cavalry confrontation or infantry confrontation. It's probably a lot more like terrorists, hit and run. and sneak up on you, whack you, and get out before you even know what happened, or you know what happened, but before you even know who did it or how they were able to do it. I think that's probably more the way the devil fights. And so, be circumspect. And again, there's an admonition there to watch out for some things. And then following that, and every verse has a context, you know, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. So it looks to me like the time, your time, is a place that the devil can get you. Time is something we have to watch. If we are admonished to not waste time in the works of darkness, but we're to make sure that we're in the light and make sure we're walking circumspectly, then we want to shed some light on the matter of time. And we want to be attentive and aware about the matter of our time. Because time can be stolen away from you. And that word redeeming, that means to rescue from loss, to redeem, is to rescue from loss, to reclaim. Redeeming the time. I don't like starting late. You know, sometimes we start late. But if I'm starting late, it's because I like to start late one service because I ran late on the last one, not because everybody's getting there late. You know, if you start at 11 o'clock, if the whole thing starts at 11 o'clock and you can be, if there's enough people there, you can start singing at 5 till you stole 5 minutes from the devil. But if you're supposed to start at 11 o'clock and you really can't get everything going until 10 after, then the devil stole 10 minutes from everybody. And so, you know, it's walking circumspectly concerning time. I don't like to waste time. I don't like it when I waste my time. I don't like it when my family wastes my time. I don't like it when anybody else wastes my time. I look at time this way. Time is one thing that everybody has been given equally. And we were talking about gifts, and this is, again, in the context, this is one of the things that we've been given. We've been given time, and it's also part of our stewardship. It is a gift to us from God, and it is a stewardship of ours to use for God. And as stewards of time, we're supposed to use our time wisely, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Now, what are days? Days are an increment of time, right? Redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Now, you probably think, you know, your first thought about the days being evil, you think about the days in which we live, you know, the days. The days are evil. These are evil days, right? We live in evil times. But you understand, time is a creation of God. Again, I don't want to be too philosophical here, but either time is something that's pre-existent or it's a creation of God. And if it's pre-existent or self-existent, then it's ultimate. And God is ultimate. I don't mean, you know, like ultimate, excellent, you know, party on, dude. But I mean, God is God is ultimate. I mean, there's nothing above or beyond. There's nothing transcendent of Him. He is ultimate. And so if He's ultimate, in the beginning, God created heaven and the earth. And so God being ultimate, there was no time before He made anything else. And then, you know, this is one of the conundrums that physicists and philosophers alike try to unravel, and that is the antinomy of time. Was there a universe, a material universe, before there was time, or was there time before there was a material universe? Is there such a thing as time before the Big Bang? And again, I do kind of tend to believe in a Big Bang. I just believe that Big Bang happened at the hand of God. You know, that everything occurred out of nothing. They believe it was some hyper-condensed matter, you know, that all the matter in the universe was at one time about the size of a Chicago softball and just condensed in this extreme dense, you know, I mean, how dense could that be? But then that density, you know, it finally had to release itself, and then you've got this explosion that occurs. But it did begin. In other words, it hasn't always been here. Scientists pretty much established, you know, we can't believe that it's always been here. It isn't as it is. It hasn't always been like it is. So it had a beginning. We established that it has a beginning. We agree there. The question is what kind of a beginning and who authorized the beginning, because again, something has to be ultimate. And time can't exist unless God makes something by which it can be measured. Now, look at Romans chapter 8 with me. We'll go to, maybe to Colossians later, but it's not as necessary. Romans chapter 8. Verse 18, Romans 8:18, "For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creature waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God. The creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who hath subjected himself," or subjected the same in hope, "because the creature itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that..." Talk to me. What's this saying? The whole creation, right? Let's say it again. "We know that" what? "The whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even ourselves grow within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body." Again, we could stay there a little longer too, but you understand the whole creation, everything that God created, is groaning under the curse of the fall. When Adam fell, he brought a curse on all of creation. And if time is something that God created, and then the whole creation is under a curse, then guess what is true about time? Time is under a curse. And that tells me that unless we're deliberate and purposeful in the use of our time, that it's inevitable that things are going to go wrong with time. It's got a built-in self-destruct mechanism. In other words, you can't just say, "Well, I've got a half an hour here. It doesn't really matter what I do with it." Again, everybody needs to rest. Everybody needs a little relaxation. Everybody needs a little downtime for entertainment, amusement, doing your hobby, reading a book or whatever. I'm not saying that it's work, 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 all 16 waking hours a day, and if you really love God, you'll only sleep 4 hours a night and burn yourself out by 50. I'm not trying to say, you know, that, but I'm saying that people squander sometimes large slabs of time and just waste it. They don't plan what they're going to do. They don't have very much to do. And so time just kind of gets away from them. Day after day, you know, sitting in front of the TV watching Jerry Springer and Maury Povich and all that sort of thing. You understand? That kind of stuff, see. Somebody wasn't planning on what they were going to do with their time. Now, if keeping a garden, you know, you take care of your flowers and that, you know, that can be a very therapeutic thing. I wouldn't consider that to be a waste of time. That's good. That's constructive. You know, you're helping to bring some beauty to the lives of the people around you by nurturing your flower garden. And really, I think that's a good thing. We need more beauty in the world. And I find it therapeutic to work with dirt. I don't get to do it very much anymore. The yard we have in the backyard, so got so many big trees, there's no point in trying to even think about growing anything in the backyard. And I don't fool with flowers. So I don't have a vegetable garden, which I was not taking too good care of the last couple I had anyway. So, but that's just beginning to ramble there, lose a little time. But you said time has a curse on it. And so you say, now here I got 16 waking hours in the day, and every one of them's cursed. 60 minutes in every one of those hours, and 60 seconds in every one of those minutes, and every one of those seconds is cursed. The whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. And again, the only way we know how much time has gone by is by measuring it by things that God created. We measure months by the moon. We measure years by the sun. We measure days by the sun. We divide it up, you know, into degrees, minutes, and seconds, the 360 and all, you know, degrees, and reduce that down using that figure. But time without some good purpose always eventuates in sin. It will. You just say, now, I'm going to stop right now having any good purpose for what I'm going to do. right now. Just for the next 12 hours, I don't have one thing planned that I'm going to do. I don't have any intentions or commitment to any good purpose for my time. This next 12 hours is just wide open. It'll eventuate in something that you probably ought not do. That's why you have a schedule. Understand pagan, you know why pagan cultures remain in darkness? Brother Bach was over here Wednesday night and he was talking about how in Togo, I mean, now we've been centuries here, we've understood about the importance of running water, washing yourself, and sanitary purpose of running water. He said in Togo, they're still trying to teach those people that for sanitary purposes, you have to use running water. And it's a hard concept. I mean, they don't really get it. And they're intelligent people. They're not stupid people. But you know why? Their culture is pagan. And in primitive pagan cultures, everything is cyclical. It doesn't really matter. And even in ancient Egypt, as much as they accomplished building the pyramids and all that, even the chronology of the dynasties of the pharaohs, it's been quite a mystery to unravel. I think Donovan Corville finally figured out how to work it. But the Egyptian chronologies, archaeologists don't believe, that there's any evidence for, say, for example, Joseph in Egypt. Take a figure like Joseph, as important as he was, and say, well, we find somebody who looks a lot like Joseph, but he doesn't show up at the right point in the chronology. And then Moses and the plagues, Well, we find a guy who really, he does seem to resemble Moses very much, and what he does in Egypt, what's said about him. He looks a lot like Moses, but he shows up in the wrong place in the chronology, so the Bible must be wrong. Because the Bible says it happened X number of years before this, and we can date this by this, and so therefore there's no correlation here between the chronology. And Donovan Corville, happened to be a Seventh-day Adventist, but Donovan Corville got working. He wrote a book called The Exodus Problem and Its Ramifications. And he got really looking at the way that the Egyptians reckoned things, and realized that the important thing to an Egyptian wasn't, at least an ancient Egyptian, wasn't that it happened in some point on a timeline, but that it happened. And these things, again, they come back around. And I believe in cycles, seasons, and things like that are important. But what's really important is that it happened this time of year. And things being causative of other things, this happened, therefore that happened because this happened. The concept, it's so deeply ingrained in your Western mind that to you, of course everybody thinks like that, but you'd be surprised, not everybody does. In ancient societies and primitive societies, the very idea, the concept of linear time and cause and effect, things that happen today having an impact on things that happen tomorrow, is in many cases just lost to them. It's hard for them to grasp it. And so part of why they live in such primitive conditions and aren't able to make any progress. They have abundant natural resources, but they're not able to tap into those natural resources and build something for the future. I don't say exploit them, but utilize the things that are at their disposal to build a permanent, lasting kind of a civilization because of their concept of time. They don't really get the idea of planning for the long range. Building something today instead of a grass hut, but building something that's going to last for 50 years or 100 years or maybe more than 100 years so you don't have to build it again. Because if you don't have to build it again, then you don't have to spend time building. Now you can spend time doing something else. You say, well, my children can build their own house. Well, if I can give my children a house to live in that I've built, then they won't have to build a house and they can do other things. One of our founding fathers said, I study war so that my children might study politics so that their children might be able to study art and literature and music. The development of civilization and culture. But in primitive societies, their concept of time, because they don't get the importance of redeeming the time, their time is stolen away from them. and they remain in ignorance, and they remain in poverty, and they remain in disease and unsanitary conditions. Part of that reason. So we're to redeem the time. Now that word redeem, again, it means to rescue from loss. That means buy it all up. Buy up all the time you can. When we're talking about gifts, we recognize that not everybody is given an equal number of gifts. Not everybody is given the same gifts. We only got through really a discussion of the speaking gifts, and there's other gifts, and we'll probably not get to those until the fall quarter. We'll probably in the fall quarter maybe look at some of the other gifts. We're going to take a break at the end of May for a regular quarter, summer quarter. So anyway, but you say, well, no, this person has this combination of gifts, and that person has a different combination of gifts, and maybe they have more, maybe I have less, maybe I'm way down on the bottom, maybe I'm in the middle or at the top. But wherever you happen to be, you know that everybody else is given a different component of gifts, except for time. Every one of us is given 24 hours in a day. It is the only commodity that all of us are given equally. You say, well, I'm the kind of person I can get by on 6 hours sleep. Or I'm the kind of person I can get by on 10 hours sleep, you know, or whatever it takes. Yeah, I need about 8. Again, if I don't train, you know, if I don't work out, then I can get by on 6. But then I have other problems. So if I train, I need a little more sleep. But if I take the time to train, I need the time to sleep. I seem to get more done because I've got more energy. I'm more invigorated. I'm sharper and more energetic during the time that I'm awake. You know, so there's different ways that we can use that time, and you have to find out what makes you productive. But if you don't say, well, here's how I make the most out of my time, then that time, believe me, that time is, it's not just sort of suspended in a neutral zone. It is cursed. And cursed things are going to come out of that time. You have to redeem it. Get it back from what? From the curse. Isn't that what you're redeemed from? You're redeemed from the curse. And that time doesn't belong to us. Now again, we live in it. We wake up and the clock is ticking, and we go to sleep and the clock is ticking. We say, is the next minute mine? No, it isn't. The next minute you have to redeem. You can. All you have to do is put it to good use in order to redeem it. But by nature, that next 60 seconds that's coming up on that clock is cursed and put to a bad use unless we say, during this time, we will use that minute to accomplish something for good, for the kingdom of God, for our own edification, for self-improvement, or for some way to accomplish good in the world. Because if we don't deliberately and intentionally use it that way, it will accomplish no good. And that curse that's on it is sort of, it has its own inertia, you know. 1 minute isn't going to be too hard to put on the brakes. 2 minutes, you can put on the brakes. Try wasting time for about 3 days. I mean, just let the curse take over for about 3 days of your time. I mean, just watch TV, have a couple of beers, slob around, indulge yourself, do whatever your whims feel like. Don't bother doing anything good on purpose. Just kind of do whatever you feel like doing and give yourself for about 3 days over your base. No, I'm not recommending it. But I'm saying, if you do that, you wait. You tell me if it's easy to put the brakes on and turn that thing around. It's a constant battle to be using time properly. And it naturally goes, you don't have to fight to misuse time. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be an act of the will to have those minutes consumed in pointless things. It's self-generating, the evil productivity of time. Now the old sayings, you know, idle hands are devil's workshop. Where do you think the folks paid attention, you know? They thought about things. And everybody, again, we live in a very affluent society and we have leisure. And leisure is not a bad thing. I'd rather live to 75 or 80 because I had some leisure than die at 55 because it didn't. But it's that utilization of that leisure that we have to be careful about. The people who refuse to use their time wisely will pay a price for that. Now, again, I mentioned Genesis chapter 1 in the beginning. God created. He made the lights. He set lights in the heavens. What? To do what? Called the day. You know, the light when the sun was out, that's day. When the moon's out, that's night. In the evening and morning were the first day. And it was good. And then Adam sinned, and cursed is everything for thy sake. And it lies under that curse, and it's right now groaning, travailing in pain. All the natural upheavals that the world, that the universe experiences, earthquakes, hurricanes, volcanic eruptions, tornadoes, famines, or floods, forest fires, whatever it happens to be, if it's destructive, and sometimes forest fires are for the benefit of the woods, but anything that's destructive like that is part of that curse that's on nature. You can't get time back. Nobody, you know, if you did have a time machine, the clock would still be ticking on you. So however, say, well, I can go back and maybe I can go back and fix that. If you had a time machine, could go back and redo something, you still loosen that time out of your life that you had to do to go back and redo it. It just keeps moving on. It can't be recalled. And Job said, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle. And boy, the older you get, I'm talking to an older crowd, the older you get, the more you realize, talking about things. You know, in the last 15 years, man, how many things have happened in this church in the last 15 years? You know, the things that have happened, what we've experienced, the people that have been here, come and gone, those who've gone on to serve the Lord, those who've gone on to be with the Lord. And you know, and sometimes it just seems like a lifetime ago, and sometimes it seems like yesterday. You know, sometimes I'm surprised not to see Brother Clark here, and sometimes I almost forget that he ever was because I got other things to think about. And it's just we just move on. And I'm talking about LJ, for those of you that go back that far, LJ, a great friend. As a cloud is consumed and vanishes away, so he that goeth down to the grave shall come up no more. David said, my days are consumed as smoke. James said, your life's a vapor. It appears for a little time, vanishes away. And so we better redeem it. If time is short and we're commanded to buy it back, that means that we have to deliberately and intentionally have a godly purpose for the time that we've been given. Psalm 90:12 says, teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. Well, one of the things we ought to be doing with our time is we ought to be giving out the gospel. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse number 34. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse number 34. Awake to righteousness and sin not, for some have not the knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame. Again, the idea of not languishing in bed when it's time to get up. You say, well, it's, you know, what about sleeping in? Well, if you need to sleep in, sleep in. But when you've slept enough, get up. And he didn't say that, you know, you shouldn't ever sleep, but he's saying you're sleeping too long. You become a lover of the covers, you know. And now people are going to hell because you're spending time doing something that you spend enough time doing. You say, well, I need some rest. Well, everybody needs some rest. But after you've got enough rest, don't you know when you've had enough? Or are you just resting because you like rest for rest's sake? Awake to righteousness and sin not, for some have not the knowledge of God. Speak this to your shame. But really, with more clarity than that, look at John chapter 4. John chapter 4 and verse number 35. Say ye not, there are yet 4 months, and then cometh the harvest. Behold, I say unto you, look unto, or lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. Again, once again, we've got the measurement of time there. So I've got time. Say not. There's X number of years. There's X amount of time. Verse number 35, 4 months. And then cometh the harvest. I can put it off. I'll get around to it one of these days. Time's not ready yet. No, look on your field. See, the problem is, we look when we're looking at only one particular field, that field may not be ripe, but there's a field ripe somewhere. Somewhere there's a field ripe to the harvest. And he said, now will you pray? Jesus said, pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he will send forth laborers into his harvest. And we have to be aware, again, where do I think the harvest is now? You know, if we're going to start talking about missions, I think it's in South America. I think it's in Southeast Asia. I think it's in Eastern Europe. Probably some in Africa. I don't know of any particular African mission field where things are really going great guns, but there is some harvest going on over there. I really don't think it's Germany. No. I really don't think it's England. You know, again, we have missionaries in England. I don't think we have anybody in Germany. You say, why? Well, because I don't think that that's really the field that the Lord said He's harvesting in right now. I think He harvested that field a while ago. I mean, I read church history. I know something about the Reformation. I guess they're planning some kind of a big missions outreach, you know. And anytime there's an Olympics, there's always some group, and I applaud them. I thank God for them. There's always some group that organizes some sort of a large-scale evangelistic campaign in association with the Olympics. And this coming Olympics, it happens to be in Greece. And you think, well, that's, you know, that's almost full scale going around back to the beginning. I mean, the very place where Paul did most of his church planning and evangelism, the books, the Bible, you read, you know, those churches. That's part of Corinthians and Thessalonians and Philippians. See, those are churches in that part of the world. Going right back to where it started. It doesn't necessarily mean the rapture is going to happen after the Olympics, but it's just an interesting thing that, you know, here we are 20 centuries down the road, and to me, the eyes of the church right now, and I'm praying. I don't really have a stake in anything going on over there, but if I find up somebody our stripe that's going, I might get behind them with some money. I might get behind the other ones with some money too. If there's not anybody of our stripe, but I'm going to get behind them with prayer no matter what. And pray it to be fruitful. Because wouldn't it be something if through the Olympics being there and some sort of a great evangelistic... again, I'm trying to avoid the buzzwords, you know, evangelistic thrust. You know. But if some real soul-winning campaign was successful and planted some churches there, you know, had good solid basis, you know, a core group of 30, 40, maybe 100, a couple hundred people... that were excited and were saved and going great guns for God. You understand, man, that could just be breaking wide open again a field that had nothing has happened for centuries. You try to, next time you meet a Greek person, you try to evangelize them. There's no Greek evangelical church here in Chicago, so they're not unheard of. But just try it. See how open they are to it. See how, you know, and if you think American Greeks are hard, go over there and talk to them. See how hard they are. Bailey and Theophanophilus were over there. Bailey's still there. And they have a few Greek nationals, but their church is not mostly made up of Greek nationals. It's mostly made up of people who live in Greece that come from other countries. Chinese people, Filipino people, African people that live in Greece, and that's mostly what their church is composed of. And they're in Greece, they're in Athens. So, you know, you would think that if the Greeks were open, so was that a harvest field? I don't know, maybe God's getting ready to harvest it. Maybe He's going to open it up again. But it's the kind of thing, looking at the time and saying, hey, here, what time is it in God's calendar? And what time do I have? What time am I given? And how am I best using my time? Am I best using my time beating my head up against the wall, trying to plant a church in Munich? Because they've got hot and cold running water and electricity and air conditioners and BMWs and Autobahns and, you know, and Wiener Schnitzel. Or maybe I ought to, you know, right now, there's if what I knew 10 years ago is still true, right now there's villages in Venezuela where every year those villagers cut a landing strip for a small aircraft to get in so that someday they can bring a missionary can come in there and tell them about Christ, bring them the Bible, bring them the gospel. I mean, they have kept a landing strip. There's several villages that have done. They have kept a landing strip, and nobody's come yet. But they've cut that landing strip and kept it open in case somebody would be willing to bring the gospel to them. I mean, so it's not that huge of a place, you know. Not going to be any prestige. You're not going to get your cover on the sword of the Lord or your picture on the cover of the sword of the Lord if you go do that. But you're saying they built you a house just like theirs. And they built you a building for you to preach in. The best one they can. And they've got everything ready. It's just they're just waiting for somebody to care enough to bring it down there to them. Somehow they got word, you know, over a mountain someplace, somehow through some kind of jungle network. Say, well, you know, these Ruckmanites, and not just Ruckmanites, but these soreheads that go around splitting churches, you know, think they're so important. Say, you know, you really think you're doing something for God. Why don't you just go to Venezuela? Amen. I mean, really, there's a great opportunity there and a great need, and those people are hungry and ready. It'd take a few years to learn their language, but they can't wait to hear what you have to say. You know, instead of trying to get this little group to follow you, that little group to follow you, or starting home Bible studies out of somebody's church, why don't you just go down there? There's 200 people, a whole village of lost people just waiting for you to show up. And I don't know. I wonder sometimes if people who are troublemakers in churches, people who are a problem like that, people who go around just sowing discord and starting trouble and splitting churches, if it's not that God probably did call them to do something like that and ain't doing it. Because they seem to have some gifts and talents, a good handle on the Word of God, the ability to teach it, and they can get people to follow them. But do they accomplish any good? No. They split churches and they sour people against their church. There's people that got in a church spat here 12 years ago that still haven't recovered from it. I don't know if they'll ever recover from it. Some people do, but other people don't. And they're still licking their wounds and feeling sorry for themselves over something that happened 12 years ago. And they were wrong, by the way. But they're just still feeling sorry for themselves. You say, now, wouldn't it be a whole lot better if that person had started all that trouble? I'd send them support. I'd definitely send them support to get it out from underneath my skin. But even so, you say, well, what's he going to do? He's going to teach the Bible and he's going to win people to Christ. You see, but the use of the time, sometimes it has to do with, it's not just what you can do, it's where you're doing it. And we have to be aware that our time is important, every minute is important, and how we use those minutes is important, but also even the geographical location of where you utilize those moments. Look, I say to you, there's 4 months. Or I say you not, there are yet 4 months. And then cometh the harvest. Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white, all ready to harvest. And he that reapeth, receiveth wages, gathereth fruit on life eternal, that he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice together. And that's starting to sound like 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse number there. But we are to evangelize with it. And then, of course, go to church. Now, again, I'm talking to a crowd that goes to church. But Hebrews chapter 10, verse number 25, we should look at that. I always feel kind of funny about preaching on the importance of going to church in church. But there's a lot of people that used to that don't anymore. So it must be one of those things that gets away from us if we're not careful. I'm saying if you don't just put it on your calendar, it's church time. Something else will take that time. And whatever it is that takes that time will have its own inertia. And although I was saved 20-some-odd years ago, this year, December, it'll be 30 years, so 29 and a half years, it's really not a battle for me to go to church. But I'll have to say there's been a couple of times where I was sick enough and I stayed home on a Sunday night and I thought, this is kind of nice. But I'd go back to church. Well, of course, I have to. You know, it's my job. But I understand the temptation. I do. I mean, it's not like I can't get, you know, I don't understand. You know, I miss being at church, but it's kind of nice not to have to, you know, turn around and go back. We went to church over in Michigan because they're, you know, Galilean is meeting in another church in the afternoon. So they're having one kind of long combined service in the middle of the day, start at 1 o'clock. And that afternoon that we went to church over there, they happened to be in their missions conference. Oh, I need to take that offering. We better do that quick or we're going to run out of time. But got home, you know, and it's 6 o'clock in the evening. Man, what are we going to do? You know, we got all this time before bedtime. Instead of pulling out of here at 10:30 like I usually do on Sunday night, I'm home at 6 o'clock. Man, this is kind of nice. You say, well, why don't you just do that all the time? Because in the Bible they had Sunday night service, that's why. And if they had a Sunday night service in the Bible, there must be a reason for it. So I figure if they did it, then we ought to do it. The trouble with churches that don't have Sunday night service is that they do have Sunday morning services. Because that, I mean, it's right there. You know, again, and by the way, what Jesus said, whatsoever you bind on earth is bound in heaven. Whatsoever you loose on earth is loosed in heaven, over there in Matthew 18. Again, if the church binds together to have services at a particular time, that's bound in heaven. And if it's bound in heaven, then you understand you're getting out from underneath the authority of the church if you don't say, well, it's just something somebody made up. No, it's bound in heaven because it's bound on earth by people and by God's people in God's name. They bind together to meet at a certain time. And if Jesus said, whatsoever ye shall bind on earth is bound in heaven now, then it's bound in heaven. And we're not just being disobedient to somebody's idea. We're being disobedient to God. If God verifies what the church decides to do by binding it in heaven, and you say, I decide not to do it. That's because once that's been decided, that's God's time. Now we have this offering to take. I need a couple guys to help me out. I forgot last week because we had a guest speaker, but this is a special offering that we're taking for this quarter, or this month anyway. And yeah, you can spread them around too. But the purpose of that is for young people mostly, not exclusively, but mostly bus kids. But it could involve church kids too. If a family is in a problem financially, if they're in, maybe not necessarily in trouble, but they're having a hard time at some given time, when there's a trip, you're going to go to camp or go to a conference or something, and the kids need money for transportation or food or whatever, that's what that offering's for, is to enable some kids whose parents can't send them to be able to go. So again, if you can contribute. Every Sunday school class is taking the same offering for the same purpose. I personally would like to fill those four pigs. See, if we can stuff the pigs, then...
I hope you're seeing a little slapping.
Yeah, I mean... Hey, while they're doing that, remember Hebrews 10:25, we're talking about church again. But not forsaking the assembly of yourselves together. But how's the rest of it go? I know that... Pardon me? Yeah, as a matter of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see what? The day approaching. Once again, you've got to mention time in there. As you see the day approaching, because there will come a day when you won't be able to do that anymore. We'll be assembled in heaven and worshiping there, but that won't be an option, and so you won't get rewarded for what you decided to do that was right, because you're just going to do that because that's all there is to do in heaven, is assemble and worship. But down here, you have an opportunity to be rewarded for being obedient. So, that's one of the things we... You need to dedicate time to evangelism. and evangelizing in the right way, in the right place. Time for church. Time to pray. Of course, that's very clear in the passage in the last one we'll look at in Colossians. If you turn over there, we're going to look at Ephesians chapter 4 and Colossians, or excuse me, Ephesians chapter 5 and Colossians chapter 4. In Colossians chapter 4, and verse number 5, walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. Let your speech be all with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know you ought to answer every man. Those things have to do with evangelism. Backing up, look at verse number 2, continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving, with all praying for us, that God would open unto us a door of utterance to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in bonds, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom toward them without redeeming the time. You got an idea. Paul wants to do that, and he wants them to do that, but he wants them to pray for him that he'll be able to do that successfully. Again, so with regard to redeeming the time for prayer. We'll say some more things about that probably in the sermon this morning, because something that the Lord did, and we'll be looking at that. But again, this idea of time, it is... It's not something that is inherently good. It's something that is, ever since the fall, cursed. And it was good before the fall, but now, since the fall, it's dangerous. And we can make good use of it if we're walking circumspectly. But it will degenerate naturally to bad use of itself unless we are deliberate and intentional and have plans for using it in the right way. Again, prayer, evangelism, church attendance, just a couple of main things that are mentioned with regard to time. But that which is good, that which edifies, that which builds up, that which improves us is all good use of time. And anything that weakens our conscience, makes us less sensitive to God, takes spiritual things less seriously, of course, and anything that degenerates rapidly into sin or vice is a bad use of time. And the only way to guard against it is to have a schedule. Again, schedule your diversions. Schedule your relaxation. Schedule your amusements. I didn't say don't have them. But know how much time you can and should give to them, what it takes to, you know, kind of clear your head and get back to what you need to do, and make sure that you don't even over-dedicate there. And that's the best way to use your time. All right. That'd be break time. We'll see you back here for 10 minutes. Choir rehearsal? No choir rehearsal. All right. 5 o'clock tonight, but not now.